Hi, I'm Roger Berthold, Editor-in-Chief of Lab Medicine. Our fall issue contains a paper describing the evaluation of a point-of-care hematology analyzer for potential use in spaceflight. The lead author on the paper is Dr. Brian Krushen, an immunologist at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, and he's joined me today. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
I grew up in the space program. I was 5 years old when Yuri Gagarin and then later Alan Shepard made the first manned suborbital flights into space. And I remember staying up all night to watch Neil Armstrong become the first man to walk on the moon in 1969. As a young boy, did you have the same kind of fascination with the space program?
I absolutely did. I was 2 years old during the Apollo 11 landing, so I was around, but I don't really remember it. But I do remember the first space shuttle launch, STS-1, with Crippen and Young, and how exciting that was. I believe I was about 13. And so I really was a space shuttle guy, grew up following that program, and I can't believe that from that beginning I ended up being fortunate enough to work at JSC and be able to support the shuttle program.
Tell us about your background as a medical technologist and how you got involved with NASA.
I received my Bachelor of Science in Medical Technology from the University of South Florida in Tampa, go Bulls, and did my generalist internship at Tampa General Hospital. My wife, coincidentally, is also a USF TGH educated medical technologist, which is a coincidence. I very much enjoyed working in the clinical laboratory. I gravitated towards the immunology serology portion of the clinical lab and then received an opportunity to pursue a research degree. Was able to do my dissertation work at the hospital, which was a little bit unusual to be able to have a human research project for a research PhD, under Dr. Ray Wyden. So I was really on a career path that I thought would have me working in the management of a laboratory someday when I saw the cytometrist position became available at the Johnson Space Center. So I applied for that and was fortunate to be chosen to support that. We moved to Houston, and I've been here for about 15 years now, working under Dr. Clarence Sams, who's the senior immunologist.
Brian, as you know, Skylab was launched into orbit in 1973, and the Russian space station Mir was launched in 1986, and I guess these were the first attempts at sustained habitation of an orbiting platform. When did NASA, and I guess the Russian Space Agency too, first recognize the importance of clinical laboratory resources on these space stations for monitoring the health of astronauts, or did they always assume that that would be the case?
You're absolutely correct on the timeline, and I believe there may have been Russian Salyut stations which may have preceded those by a bit, but they're wonderful platforms for investigating the adverse effects of spaceflight on human physiology. So I think since early on, that has been one of the primary focuses for all of these space stations, was defining how physiology changes during spaceflight, how microgravity, radiation, stress, and confinement for prolonged periods affect humans adversely. So I think the focus was medical early on, but clinical laboratory resources were scarce on board those stations, and they remain scarce today, even on board the International Space Station, which is the reason for the development effort that we describe in the article. Now our focus on board the ISS is in preparing for exploration-class deep space missions, and those may be missions to asteroids, the moon, or Mars. And these missions will be characterized by even further increased radiation, even more prolonged durations with limited support and extreme isolation. So what we're really doing on board ISS is trying to define what changes in humans and develop countermeasures for that to enable those exploration class missions to proceed.
Tell us about the clinical laboratory resources that are available on the International Space Station right now. Were they included in the initial segments of the station, or have they been added later?
Well, as I mentioned before, it remains scarce even on board ISS in 2013, and it's not from a lack of desire. We very much need clinical laboratory instruments on board, both to support clinical monitoring of astronauts, but also for medical research. As we discuss in the article, terrestrial instruments tend to be large. They use liters of fluid, buffers, and reagents, etc. They generate corresponding liters of liquid biohazardous or toxic waste. They tend to be more complicated, have a lot of moving parts. They tend to be vibration sensitive. I can't really shake up the instruments in your laboratory and then expect them to work well. So generally, these won't work during space flight. They depend on gravity for sample aspiration or fluid handling. What has flown on board the ISS has been an ISTAT instrument and ultrasound, and these were generally as demonstrations. I don't believe they're routinely used for medical purposes today. Astronauts are not perceived as ill on board the space station, but they do show the physiological changes that are associated with space flight, muscle loss, bone loss, things that occur during microgravity fluid shifts, stress-associated immune dysfunction. We'll know more once more laboratory instruments are deployed aboard the station. Currently, we can't even generate a white count on board the ISS, which is one thing that the instrument we describe in the article could do. This is not really my area, but I think most of the modules went up empty, primarily due to weight restrictions for the various launch vehicles. And then I think the shuttle flight in between deploying the segments outfitted the modules on board ISS with their respective equipment.
Brian, do astronauts routinely collect blood samples during space flight for either analysis, you know, with whatever equipment is available in space or to send back to Earth?
They sure do. There's quite a bit of blood samples collected from astronauts during space flight, and also saliva samples, urine samples, various types of biomedical samples. They fall into two basic categories. Medical operations testing, which is something that all astronauts will perform as part of their clinical monitoring, and also research testing. So during spaceflight, it's now more common than ever for astronauts to collect blood samples. We recently concluded at JSC an immunology study on board ISS, and to be able to perform cellular analysis, it was necessary to have live, viable blood samples. So we collected blood samples immediately to the undock of some vehicle. It could have been a Russian Soyuz vehicle or the space shuttle, and returned the samples to Earth for a terrestrial analysis within about 48 hours. That worked well. About 20 astronauts participated and found quite a few immune parameters were dysregulated during spaceflight, including T-cell function, cytokine production profiles. Astronauts are trained to perform phlebotomy during spaceflight by astronaut trainers at JSC. They also can get study-specific training after that for things particular to one research study or another. One thing that's interesting regarding on-orbit collection of blood samples is how the tubes fill. For our study, we flew plastic EDTA and glass ACD tubes for our study and found that they filled very differently in a microgravity environment. The plastic EDTA tube, it was very easy to fill from bottom to top and judge when that was full. But the glass tube, due to the hydrophilic nature of the tube, tended to basically coat the tube within a couple of seconds with blood, which gave them the appearance of being full. We assessed this during parabolic flight to actually learn exactly what was going on and had to adjust the crew training to get adequately filled samples from orbit.
One of the things that interested me in your paper was the effect of space flight on the immune system. I think that's a very important area certainly for extended space travel. You know, evaluation of any type of clinical laboratory instrument in microgravity must present really special challenges. Tell us about the challenges that you faced evaluating this hematology instrument.
Depends on if you're designing something from the ground up or if you're evaluating a commercial instrument, and it's very favored at NASA to be able to use commercial instrumentation wherever possible. Basically, the commercial sector does a lot of the developmental work for you. There are some amazing miniaturized instruments coming out there now in the immunology, cytometry, hematology area. Commercial instrument evaluation primarily centers on the things we discussed earlier, such as power requirements, size, fluidics, and robustness. You need to be able to transit from blood all the way through to data, which sometimes requires a protocol for staining blood cells, fixing or lysing red cells, or whatever else may be required to deliver the properly processed sample into the instrument. For the current project, we described in the article, it was very fortuitous. Very little modification was required. At least that's our recommendation to NASA based on the data in the article. On an earlier project, we had done a similar effort for a flow cytometer and had to make significant adjustments, removing vibration-sensitive mirrors, lenses, hard-mounting laser beams. But for the hematology instrument in the article, really only had one moving part that we were able to ascertain, which was a camera lens that focuses up and down. So very robust for microgravity.
Did you expect that the instrument would function properly in microgravity? It seems to me that an instrument designed to perform in gravity with fluidics and such the things that you just discussed could fail catastrophically in a microgravity environment. What did you find in your study?
Very few instruments, be they large instruments or small handhelds, work in a microgravity environment without some modifications. But we were very excited about the instrument we describe in the article. It already is very miniaturized, has few moving parts. The finger stick sample is very attractive as compared to a venous blood collection. The way the cuvettes contained a DNA intercalating dye and a lysing reagent, the way the cuvettes were individually wrapped, is very attractive for spaceflight. So we expected that it would function very well in a microgravity environment, and indeed, that's what the parabolic flight data showed. Unlike most other instruments in your laboratory, where if you can imagine holding them sideways or upside down, they certainly would not work properly.
You mentioned the parabolic flight. You tested the instrument on a weightless wonder, or the reduced gravity aircraft, which I understand is unofficially known as the Vomit Comet. Tell us about that experience.
Parabolic flight aircraft are a wonderful Earth-based platform to achieve actual zero gravity for brief periods of time. I didn't know about this when I got to JSC, and I was amazed to find out there's a way to generate real spaceflight quality microgravity without going to space. Basically, NASA utilizes special aircraft that are reinforced, padded on the inside to support laboratory operations, and then they fly the aircraft with the nose pitched up, almost flying straight uphill. During that steep climb, everybody inside experiences 2x gravity, or hypergravity. Then the pilot rolls the aircraft over the top of the parabola and into a steep dive. And during the roll over the top, you get about 25 seconds of actual zero gravity. Everything floats just like on the space station. And when you start to count, that doesn't sound like a lot of time, but when you start to count it out, it's actually quite a long period of time. And that period is useful for evaluating hardware, training astronauts, also any science experiments that can be done very rapidly. NASA will fly 40 parabolas on a typical aircraft flight in 4 sets of 10. So you'll have 10 repeated sequences of 2x gravity, 0 gravity, 2x gravity, etc., all the way through the 10 parabolas without any intervening 1x gravity.
So when you tested the clinical analyzer, this hematology analyzer, you not only tested it in conditions of microgravity or very little gravity, but also tested it in conditions of twice gravity. So it actually was challenging it with more severe conditions than it might experience in spaceflight.
That's correct. And during our evaluation, the instrument actually takes about 3.5 minutes to complete its analysis, and then there's no way to stop that and take partial data along the way. So you need the full 3.5 minutes. That goes through several parabolas, but we realized that if the instrument would function adequately through the hypergravity and the microgravity in sequence and generate good data, that it was basically indicating that it would function zero gravity or also function well in a hypergravity conditions. And we described this in several figures in the paper.
Tell me what you would anticipate would be the requirements for using an analyzer on the space station. Would it have the same sort of quality control and linearity validation requirements that we apply to our instruments here on Earth?
That's an interesting question. NASA terrestrial laboratories, such as the clinical laboratory at the Johnson Space Center, would and always do fully comply with CAP regulations for achieving their licensure and certification. When you're talking about taking instruments to spaceflight, the conditions for evaluation need to change somewhat. You want to validate to as much rigor as possible, but the spaceflight use puts some constraints on your ability to perform that type of validation. I believe CAP or other regulatory agencies require up to 30 quality control samples, several linearity samples to be processed, sometimes up to 30 interassay precision samples, lower limit of detection, correlation to a standard instrument. And all of this, I think, needs to be performed in the laboratory where the instrument will be operated. So it's obviously impossible to do something like that on the International Space Station. So you may validate as much as possible and as reasonable on the ground, and then perform as many checks as possible on orbit. And in the end, it's up to the flight surgeon who will use the information to determine if he's comfortable with the information being generated by the instruments.
Sounds like it'll be quite a challenge. Do you personally train the astronauts on how to use these analyzers?
We've participated in training crews how to collect blood samples, but we will not train the crew how to use specific analyzers until an analyzer is selected, readied for flight, and actually deployed to the International Space Station. At that point, the appropriate crew trainers will work through the protocols with the crew members. And prior to that, this article just describes the first steps of validation in determining if this instrument might work in a microgravity environment. There would be more work to be done before this instrument would actually be deployed. Vibration tolerance, off-gas testing, which is actually heating up the instrument, seeing if any improper chemicals come off, looking at the way heat is dissipated, electromagnetic interference, and things like that still need to be performed. But typically that's not too much of a problem for a commercial instrument, and most important is whether or not it will work in microgravity, which our study shows that it certainly will.
I have one last question for you. Do you anticipate that once you deploy a clinical instrument on the International Space Station or other orbiting or space travel platform, do you anticipate that CMS is going to insist on an on-site inspection?
Well, that's a great question, and I have been telling NASA for years that prior to the inspector showing up, we need to put MTs and MLTs on ISS first. So we'll get there, we'll set up the instrument, and talk later about whether or not the lifters come along.
I think that's a great idea. Dr. Krushin, I want to thank you for talking with us today, and thank you for submitting your study to Lab Medicine. I also want to say I appreciate the stunning cover image that you supplied for us.
Oh, thank you very much. It was my pleasure, and that is a wonderful image, a very rare image. You see the shuttle and the Russian vehicles, the European cargo vehicles, and the space station itself all together. And to get that image, returning astronauts had to undock and capture that image and then bring those digital images home. So that's a very special photograph.
Very unique. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you very much.